everyone. My name is Elijah David, minister of the 12th Hour Apostolic Sabbatarian Congregation, known at the 12th Hour in the Liberty Hill, Texas. Today is December the 26th, 2016. Or it's the 28th, 2020. We will start our first service today with a song entitled Onward Christian Soldier. Onward Christian soldier, marching as to war, with the cross of Yahshua going on before. Yahshua the royal master leads against the foe. Forward into battle, see his banner go. Onward, Christian soldier, marching as to war, with the cross of Yahshua going on before. At the sign of trial, Satan hosts that flee. Unto Christian soldiers, unto victory. House foundations quiver at the shout of praise. Brother, lift your voices, let your anthem ring. Onward, Christian soldier, marching as to war, with the cross of Yahshua going on before. Like a mighty army, the Church of Yah, brothers, we have treaded where the saints have trod. We are not divided, all one body we, one in hope and doctrine, one in charity. Onward, Christian soldier, marching as to war, with the cross of Yahshua going on before. Onward, many people, son of happy throne, and with our shared voices, in the triumph song, glory, land, and honor unto Yahshua the King. This truth of the sages and an angel sing. Onward, Christian soldier, marching as to war, with the cross of Yahshua going on before. The end of your long and trying journey. V.T. Hollis, Tommy Greetings, Volume 1, Number 37. 1947, April the 19th. Okay, this let's just start with... there in Isaiah 51:1-2, said, "Hearken unto me, ye that follow after righteousness, ye that seek the Yahweh, look unto the rock whence ye are hewn, and to the hole of the pit whence ye are digged. Look unto Abraham your father, and unto Sarah that bare you." As in Isaiah 51:1-2. In this chapter, Yahweh is speaking to the descendants of Abraham, unto a generation that is falling after righteousness. We now need to find in the stream of time the exact generation which inspiration here addresses. Is it the people of Moses' time, of Isaiah's time, of the apostles' time, or our time, or some other time? If the chapter is addressed unto us, then our need of studying it and our interest in it will be infinitely greater than it would be otherwise. The information we are seeking is found in verse 17. Awake, awake, put on, awake, awake, stand up, O Jerusalem, which has drunk at the hand of the Yahweh the cup of his fury. Thou hast drunken the dregs of the cup of trembling and run them out. Isaiah 51:17. This verse reveals that Yahweh is speaking unto a people who have gone through all the trials, hardships, captivity, and persecution. A lot of them to go through for their sin and disobedience. They have drunk of the dregs of the cup of the trembling and even run them out. At long last, there are no more dregs left in the cup. This could not be said unto the people in the Moses' time, nor in the Isaiah's time, nor even in the apostles' time. He could not be said unto any people at any time, but unto those who have come unto the time of their liberation from the want, fear, and insecurity which they have created through their sin and rebellion. Their divine calling to awake, however, reveals that though the time of the deliverance has come, yet they are in deep spiritual sleep, ignorant of these good tidings. Thus saith Yahweh, Elohim, and thy Elohim that pleadeth the cause of his people. Behold, I have taken out of thine hand the cup of trembling, even the dregs of the cup of my fury. Thou shalt no more drink it again. Isaiah 51:22. Yahweh, you see, positively addresses a people who have already taken all the punishment they are to take, and at long last he is pleading their cause. This cannot be said at any time unto any people hitherto for. How do we know that the time is here and that the Yahweh is now speaking unto us? We know it from the fact that these long concealed prophecies on the subject are now for the first time unfolded and brought unto the attention. We are now ready to study the chapter verse by verse, Isaiah 51:1-2. Hearken unto me, ye that follow after righteousness, ye that seek the Yahweh, look unto the rock whence ye are hewn, and unto the hole of the pit whence ye are digged. Look unto Abraham your father, and unto Sarah that bare ye, for I called him alone and blessed him and increased him. Yahweh advises his people of today to hearken unto him. They are those who are endeavoring to obtain righteousness, those who are seeking the Yahweh, and who are anxious to have a revival and reformation among them. They are now urged to look unto the rock which they are hewn, and unto the hole of the pit which they are digged. We are not to conclude that the Jews are the only descendants of the Abraham. Those who are fortunate enough to have this revelation brought unto them are the people. There is no other safe conclusion if the Elohim causes the prophecies to be written, sealed, and then unsealed at his will, and at the time appointed, the Jews, therefore, are not the only descendants of Abraham. To find who these seekers of the righteousness really are, there are several genealogical facts to consider. Number one, only the citizens of the kingdom Judah, the two-tribe kingdom, Judah and Benjamin, received the title Jews. Those of the ten-tribe kingdom, the kingdom of Israel, were scattered among the nations, and there they completely lost their identity. Number three, the Christian church herself is an upshoot of the Jewish church, Judah and Benjamin in the south, and nation. Vita Hellas called it the Christian church. Two bad words. It should be the apostolic congregation. Number three, for the apostolic congregation herself is an upshoot of the Jewish congregation of the Pharisees and the Sadducees and the Romans. The Romans were in on all that. Those pagan Rome from Italy across the ocean. I'm talking about the Mediterranean Ocean. For the apostles and her followers up until about 35 A.D. were all Jews. Then it was a multitude of Jews lost their identity by calling themselves Christians. Now that's how they lost their identity, by calling themselves Christians. And instead of calling themselves Apostolic Nazarene Creed, like it truly was, they wanted to be identified with all those heathen around them, Gentiles that is, that had joined them. They wanted to be identified with them. Comparatively speaking, only a few Jews from the kingdom of Judah have preserved their national title. Jews, the descendants of the early apostolic Jews, the Pharisee Jews at the cross, and the descendants of the ten tribes down the string of time must have increased unto a great and innumerable multitude, for the Abraham seed was to be as the sand of the sea for a multitude. It is therefore obvious that the few identified Jews of today are not the only descendants of Abraham, but that many of the Gentiles must be of Abraham. Since this mixed up situation exists, hardly anyone can really say for sure that he is not one of Abraham's children. Perhaps many of the nations whom the world calls Gentiles are the children of Abraham. We do not know for sure who is who. For the Yahweh, however, has kept a perfect genealogical record, for he said, I will make mention of Rahab and Babylon unto them that know me. Behold, Philistia and Tara and Ethiopia, this man was born there, and of Zion it shall be said, this and that man was born in her, and the highest himself shall establish her. The Yahweh shall account when he writeth up the people that this man was born there. Selah. Psalms 87:4-6. Okay, it says that, furthermore, though one be of the Gentile blood, if he truly accepts the Yahshua, he by his spiritual birth becomes of the seed of Abraham. For says inspiration, if he be the Yahshua, then are ye Abraham's seed and heirs according unto the promise. Galatians 3:29. The children of Abraham here addressed, therefore, are not to be sought among the identified unbelieving Jews, But among the Christians, they are admonished to look unto Abraham and Sarah, and to consider that when Elohim called Abraham, though he was alone, he nevertheless obeyed and Yahweh blessed him. That in spite of all the apparent impossibilities with both him and Sarah, he increased them. What if you personally and alone were called by his word, as was Abraham, to stand alone for the truth and righteousness? Would you be a hero for Yahweh as was Abraham? Or would you do as he did, as did backsliding Judas Iscariot? If you were not privileged to choose as was Abraham, Yahweh would not have reminded us of Abraham's experience. We are plainly told not to lose courage, but to have faith in Yahweh, for he intends to bless and increase us as he blessed and increased our ancestors. For Abraham and Sarah, for the reason he gives for blessing us as he blessed them is this. Isaiah 51:3. For the Yeshua shall comfort Zion. He will comfort all her waste places, and he will make her wilderness like Eden, and her desert like the garden of Yahweh. Joy and gladness shall be found therein, thanksgiving and the voice of melody. The focal point of the scriptures is the rebuilding of Zion, and that is our charge. Isaiah 51:4-5. Hearken unto me, my people, and give ear unto me, O my nation, for a law shall proceed from me, and I will make my judgments to rest for a light of the people. My righteousness is near, my salvation is gone forth, and mine arm shall judge the people. The isle shall wait upon me, and on my arm shall they trust. We are to ask to hearken unto Yahshua, because the law and the judgment are to proceed from him. These are to be a light unto the people. Again, says the Yahshua, and it shall come to pass in the last days that the mountain of the Yahshua's house shall be established in the top of the mountain, and shall be exalted by the hills, and all nations shall flow under it. And many people shall go and say, come ye and let us go up unto the mountain of Yahweh, unto the house of Elohim of Jacob, and he will teach us of his ways, and we will walk in his path. For out of Zion shall go forth the law, and the word of Yahweh from Jerusalem, and he shall judge among the nations, and shall rebuke many people. They shall beat their swords into plowshares, and their spears into pruning hooks. Nations shall not lift up sword against nation, neither shall they learn war anymore. Isaiah 2:2-4. The law is to go forth when the mountain kingdom of the Yahweh's house is established on the top of the mountains, kingdoms. And when it is exalted above the hills, then the light shall cause the rebuked nations to flow unto the mountain of Yahshua. And two, instead of beating their plowshares into swords and their pruning hooks into spears, Joel 3:10, they will beat their swords into plowshares and their spears into pruning hooks. Nation shall not lift up sword against nation, neither shall they learn war anymore. Isaiah 2:4. Alright, it says, to say my righteousness is near and my salvation is gone forth is to say that salvation has been here, but righteousness is about to come. And how true? What is the Yeshua's arm that judges the people? This we shall see as we read Isaiah 51:9-10. Awake, awake. Put on thy strength, O arm of the Yahweh, awake as in the ancient days and the generations of old. Art thou not it that hath cut Rahab and wounded the dragon? Art thou not it which hath dried the sea, the waters of the great deep, that hath made the depths of the sea a way for the ransom to pass over? How illogical it would be for Yahweh to be trying to wake himself as though he or his own arm is asleep. This verse shows that he calls the Exodus movement his arm. So we have an Exodus movement underway today. It's in a two-fold stage. We've got the Antipasaurus, Donald Trump, that started the Exodus in June of 2016, and then into 2017, about 18-20 months, that we've been in this here great movement. Rightly so, because Yahweh does his work with his servants. Well, he says that Donald Trump is one of his servants there in Isaiah 44:28 and Isaiah 45:1-13. He said, he's my anointed servant. I have raised up for this purpose in the last day, Donald Trump. Therefore are his arm, and they shall judge, rule the people, and the people shall trust on them. Lift up your eyes to the heavens and look onto the earth beneath, for the heavens shall vanish away like smoke, and the earth shall wax old like a garment, and they that dwell therein shall die in like manner. But my salvation shall be forever, and my righteousness shall not be abolished. We are necessarily reminded that all else shall perish, but not those who obtain Yahweh's salvation, and his righteousness shall stand forever. Isaiah 51:7, hearken unto me, ye that know righteousness, the people in whose heart is my law. Fear ye not the reproach of men, neither be ye afraid of their reviling. Those who know his righteousness, the people unto whom his truth is revealed, and who have the law in their heart, obviously will suffer from the reproach and reviling of men, but they are admonished not to fear. And which shall be the end of their adversary? Here is the answer. Isaiah 51:8. For the moth shall eat them up like a garment, and the worm shall eat them like wool. But my righteousness shall be forever, and my salvation from generation to generation. Painfully, we pity our latest sin brethren who are so angrily, but blindly against us. Isaiah 51:9-10. Awake, awake, put on strength, O arm of the Yahweh. Awake as in the ancient days, in the generations of old. Art thou not it that hath cut Rahab and wounded the dragon? Art thou not it which hath dried the sea, the waters of the great deep, that hath made the depths of the sea a way for the ransom to pass over? If his people were not asleep, then what need would there be for calling them to awake? We are glad that Yahweh himself is arousing us and plainly telling us that as our forefathers did great things, we too, as Yahweh's arm, can and shall do even greater things than they. Isaiah 51:11. Therefore the redeemed of the Yahweh shall return and come with singing unto Zion, and everlasting joy shall be upon their head. They shall obtain gladness and joy, and sorrow and mourning shall flee away. Thanks be unto Yahweh that he has not only awakened his people and to cause them to sing while marching in the Zion, but is also able to remove their sorrows and their mourning forever. He is well able to put everlasting joy upon their heads. Isaiah 51:12. I am he that comforteth you. Who art thou that thou shouldest be afraid of a man that shall die, and of the son of man which shall be made as grass? In an endeavor to show us how absurd it is to fear men that shall die, as does grass underfoot, inspiration in this verse emphasizes the promised comfort of Isaiah 51:11. It must be that with some the fear of men is great. Now that we have Yahweh's word and comfort, let us fear Him who only is able to be feared. Who only is to be feared. Isaiah 51:13. And forgettest the Yahweh thy Maker that hath stretched forth the heavens and laid the foundation of the earth, and hath feared continually every day because of the fury of the oppressor, as if he were ready to destroy? And where is the fury of the oppressor? When we begin to fear man, just that moment, we forget Yahweh. The question, where is the fury of the oppressor, implies that in reality there is not any. That is only a bluff. Isaiah 51:14-15. The captive exile hasteneth that he may be loosed, and that he should not die in the pit, nor that his bread should fail. But I am the Yahweh the Elohim that divideth the sea, whose waves roared. The Yahweh of Yahshua the host is his name. Yes, the captains hope for their release, but Yahweh does not hope for the sea itself to divide. He divides it at will and causes his people to go through on dry ground. Isaiah 51:16. And I have put my words in thy mouth, and have covered thee in the shadow of mine hand, that I may plant the heavens and lay the foundations of the earth, and say unto Zion, Thou art my people. Here we have Yahweh's own statement that the words we speak are the words of the truth direct from Him. Moreover, He assures us that His hand, His care and keeping are around us, that by this means He may plant the heavens, lay the foundations of the earth, and say unto Zion, Thou art my people. Isaiah 51:17. Awake, awake, stand up, O Jerusalem, which hast drunk at the hand of Yahweh the cup of His fury. Thou hast drunken the dregs of the cup of trembling and run them out. Awake, awake, my friend, to the fact that our captivity, our sorrow, and our mourning are about over. We are never again to go through them. He who divides the sea can indeed make us free. Isaiah 51:18. There is none to guide her among all the sons whom she hath brought forth. There is neither is there any that taketh her by the hand of all the sons that she hath brought up. Zion's past and even present condition is now brought to view for our consideration. What a desolation, what a terrible state for a church to be in after having brought forth many converts. There is not a one to give her a helping hand. Here we are told that the laity and Laodicea will not have any spiritual help to the mother, the ministry. No, not even one endeavors to lift his hand to help the ministering brethren. They are all more or less in agreement to stay wretched and miserable, poor and blind and naked. Revelation 3:17. Isaiah 51:19. These two things are come unto thee. Who shall be sorry for thee? Desolation, destruction, and the famine, and the sword. By whom shall I comfort thee? David of old was given to choose one of three things. So Gad came to David and told him, and said unto him, Shall 7 years of famine come unto thee in my land, in thy land, or will thou flee 3 months before thine enemies while they pursue thee, or that there be 3 days pestilence in the land? 2 Samuel 24:10-13. Now, in the like manner, Elohim's people are asked to choose either desolation and destruction or famine and the sword. Then, unlike in David's day, he himself solves our problem if we let him. These are some of the things which Yahweh people have gone through. Even now, some of these things still surround them. Our hope, nevertheless, is in the Yahweh's deliverance. Isaiah 51:20-22. Thy sons have fainted. They lie at the head of all the streets, as a wild bull in a net. They are full of the fury of the Yahweh. The rebuke of thy Elohim. Therefore, hear now this, thou afflicted and drunken, but not with wine. Thus saith Yahweh the Savior, and thy Elohim that pleadeth the cause of his people. Behold, I have taken out of thine hand the cup of the trembling, even the dregs of the cup of my fury. Thou shalt no more drink it again. Shall we not be thankful to know that everyone whose name is found in the book shall be delivered even from the time of trouble into which we are soon to enter? Michael shall stand up for his people. Daniel 12:1. Once he gathers us, he shall never again scatter us. Isaiah 51:23. But I will put it, the cup of his fury, into the hand of them that afflict thee, which has said to thy soul, bow down, that we may go over, and thou hast laid thy body as the ground and as the street to them that went over. The tables are turned. What the Yahweh's people once had to take from their enemies must soon take from them. Let us therefore not neglect to take advantage of Yahweh's plea of the deliverance. Yes, my children, since our long and trying journey is at an end, let us as Elohim's arms give earnest heed unto his awakening call. Now at the end of our long and trying journey, let us allow nothing to hold us back from obtaining the two things that are to make us stand forever, Elohim's salvation and his righteousness. We are now asked to choose either to stand on Yahweh's side or on the side of his adversary. Those who we fear, those who are doing everything to close our eyes unto Elohim's truth for this time, either to choose Yahweh, his spirit, and his revealed truth, or to choose men, desolation and destruction, the famine and the sword. Okay, it says, that's the end of Time of Greetings, volume number 37. We'll go right on into number 38. Entitled, If Not Awaked Now, They May Sleep Forever. April 26, 1947, by Viti Hara. Our subject for this afternoon is found in Isaiah chapter 52. We shall begin with the first verse. Awake, awake, put on thy strength, O Zion, put on thy beautiful garments, O Yerushalayim, the holy city. For henceforth there shall no more come unto thee the uncircumcised and the unclean. At the time this awakening call goes forth throughout the land, inspiration announces that the harvest time has arrived for the angels to put out and to keep out of the Zion and Yerushalayim the uncircumcised and the unclean. A work which inspiration verse entitles, number 1, cleansing of the sanctuary, Daniel 8:14. Number 2, purify the sons of Levi, Malachi 3:1-3. And number 3, purification of the church, Testimonies, volume 5, page 80. Number 4, judgment in the house of Yahweh, 1 Peter 4:17. Number 5, harvest time, Matthew 13:30. And I would say that's in the 12th hour. Casting out the bad fish from among the good, Matthew 13:47-48. Separating the sheep from the goats, the judgment for the living. For the sinners we know have always been and are still among Elohim's people, that the fulfillment of this scripture, therefore, is in the very near future, is shown from the fact that the truth of this chapter is now unsealed and carried unto the churches, endeavoring to awaken the people of Yahweh and to impress them with the fact that soon the harvest will commence, first separating the first fruits, 144,000, from the house of the Yahweh, the Adventist church, then to be followed by the second fruits from all nations. Revelation 7:9. The scriptures also show that the sinners will no longer walk with the saints, and that the harvest ends the world. Matthew 13:39. Stop, think, and read over again. Isaiah 51:52. Do not pass hastily over this life and death subject. Who is the Yeshua calling to awake? Zion and Jerusalem? Why not the house of Judah, the house of Israel, or some other? Who is Zion, and who is Jerusalem? Here are the answers. In Isaiah's time, Jerusalem was the capital city of the kingdom of Judah, and on Zion stood the palace of the king. And what could they antipathy represent, contemporarily speaking? Capitol Hill, the nation's executive mansion of the United States, the White House, we might call the Zion of the United States, and the capital city of the nation, Washington, D.C., we might call the Jerusalem of the United States. Okay, now for the Yeshua, however, is not addressing the United States, and as Zion and as Jerusalem are in this instance personified, their counterparts therefore are as follows. The General Conference, the capital of the denomination, must be the Zion of today, and the local conferences, the under rulers, must be the Jerusalem of today. Who then is asleep and is being called to awake? For the General Conference and the local conferences, the executive branches of the denomination, and if they were not asleep, why would inspiration be calling them to awake? Moreover, is it not true that they are blind unto these scriptures? They treat them as if they were not in the Bible at all. Does it not look unto you like that their preaching of having a whole truth, the last message of being in need of nothing more, is but self-deception? Is not the message of the judgment of the living the last indeed of the judgment for the dead? And is not the former ever so much more important than the latter? For the statement, put on thy strength, O Zion, put on thy beautiful garments, O Jerusalem, plainly shows that Zion is weak, that Jerusalem is either naked or clothed with filthy, ugly garments. How to transpose these terms from the figurative sitting to the actual? What could strength stand for if not for faith in the fulfillment of these prophecies? The Master said that without faith you could do nothing, but with it you can remove mountains. Faith, therefore, is what Zion and Jerusalem need today. Faith itself is as invisible as air, but when put into action, it can remove even greater obstacles than air can remove when it is put into action. Though we cannot see when, we can feel it and see the results of its power. So it is with the faith. Next to consider are the garments. For the garment of a person is the first thing that attracts the eye. For the beautiful garment, therefore, must represents something which transforms the appearance of the wearer from being spiritually ugly and filthy in appearance to being spiritually beautiful and admirable. What then can it represent other than true Christian character, goodness, love, mercy, and justice, that which is visible and which makes a person likable and truly a respectable Christian? For the strength and the garment together, therefore, are nothing less than the righteousness of Yahshua, faith, action, and its result. These are the prerequisites which Zion and Jerusalem have today need. These they need now because henceforth the uncircumcised and the unclean, the unbelieving and the unforgiven sinners, those who do not have the beautiful garment on, shall be bound in the bundles for the fire, no more to be found among the saints. Isaiah 52:2. Shake thyself from the dust, arise and sit down, O Jerusalem. Loose thyself from the bands of thy neck, O captive daughter of Zion. Zion and Jerusalem of the day are not only naked, but they are filthy. They lie down in the dust, as it were, are still in captivity and do not even know it. And so the daughters of Zion and Jerusalem, the denomination as a whole, is asked to arise from the dust and to sit on her throne, to free herself from the yoke of her captivity, the bands of her neck. She needs to realize that the day of her redemption is now here, and that she is now to be made free, never again to be ruled by men. Isaiah 52:3. For thus saith Yahweh, ye have sold yourselves for naught, and ye have been redeemed without money. As this verse needs no comment, let us proceed with Isaiah 52:4-5. For thus saith Yahweh Elohim, my people went down aforetime into Egypt to sojourn there, and the Assyrian oppressed them without cause. Now therefore, what have I here, saith Yahweh, that my people is taken away from naught? They that rule over them make them to howl, saith Yahweh, and my name continually every day is blasphemed. Okay, that's the same thing here in America. As long as Obama, the Assyrian ruler of our country, rules over this country, it fulfills this what I just read to you. Those that rule over them make them to howl, saith Yahweh, and my name continuously every day is blasphemed by their conduct and their leadership. These verses remind Zion and Jerusalem of today that they are oppressing the laity no less than the Egyptian masters, and the Assyrian lords oppress the children of Israel. They make Elohim's people howl, and thus they blaspheme his name and keep his people from coming in contact with Elohim's truth for this time. Isaiah 52:6, therefore my people shall know my name. Therefore they shall know in that day that I am he that doth speak, behold, it is I. Because Elohim's people are misruled, misled, and abused, and his name blasphemed, he declares that he will not leave them in ignorance. He promises that regardless how hard the carnal rulers of the unsifted nation, Zion and Jerusalem, try to keep the people in ignorance of this sifting message, he will, in spite of it, cause his people to hear and to know that he is speaking, not an enemy as they are told. What does Elohim think of this message and of his messengers? Let us read Isaiah 52:7. How beautiful upon the mountains are the feet of him that bringeth good tidings, that publisheth peace, that bringeth good tidings of good, that publisheth salvation. That saith unto Zion, thy Elohim reigneth. What better tidings than these would a people want while in their captivity? If this message, the kingdom of Yahweh, the church purified, is not a message of the peace and security, then tell us what inspiration means by saying that the wolf and the lamb, the leopard and the kid, the calf and the lion, shall lie down together, and a little child shall lead them, and the inhabitants shall not say, I am sick. The people that dwell therein shall be forgotten their iniquity. Isaiah 11:6. Isaiah 52:8. Thy watchmen shall lift up the voice with the voice, together shall they sing, for they shall see eye to eye, and the Yahshua shall bring again Zion. All Elohim's servants shall together and with joy exalt his message, the voice, because when the Yahshua again brings Zion, they shall see eye to eye. What a difference between Zion's watchman of tomorrow and her watchman of today, among whom hardly two actually see eye to eye. Only those who have withstood temptation and the strength of the Mighty One, one will be permitted to act a part in the proclaiming of the third angel's message when it shall have swelled into the loud cry. Begin here, November 19, 1908. Isaiah 15:9-10. Break forth into joy, sing together, ye waste places of Jerusalem, for the Yahshua hath comforted his people, he hath redeemed Jerusalem. The Yahshua hath made bare his holy arm in the eyes of all these nations, and all the ends of the earth shall see the salvation of our Elohim. When these things take place, then all the earth shall see the salvation of our Elohim. But now let us hear his counsel as to what he would have us do. Isaiah 52:11. Depart ye, go ye out from thence, touch no unclean thing. Go ye out of the midst of her. Be ye clean that bear the vessels of the Yahweh. Let's read that last again, Isaiah 52:11. Depart ye, go ye out from thence. Touch no unclean thing, go ye out of the midst of her. Be ye clean that bear the vessels of the Yahweh. Those who bear Yahweh's truth must be clean. They must be freed from every cord that binds them to the things of this world. Isaiah 52:12. For ye shall not go out with haste, nor go by flight, for the Yahweh will go before you, and the Elohim of Israel will be your reward. Our going into the land of our fathers, we are here told, is not to be in the fearful haste or flight, because the Yahshua himself shall go before us, and he shall be behind us. Isaiah 50:13-14. Behold, my servant shall deal prudently. He shall be exalted and extolled, and be very high. As many were astonished at thee, his visage was so marred more than any man, and his form more than the sons of men. Now these verses, as you know, have long been applied to the Yahshua. He nevertheless does not do all these things personally, but he does them, through his messengers. Now note in verse 13, we are told that the Yahshua is greatly exalted, whereas in verse 14 we are told his visage was marred, and is far more than the sons of men. He hath no form or comeliness, no beauty that we should desire him. Isaiah 53:2. Why? The only answer that can be given to the question is this. Elohim knows that the people's sinful nature urges them to make idols of men. They easily fall for men who can put forth a good front. They act as though they were baptized in the names of these here modern Pauls and Apollos. They are followers of the pride and pomp rather than followers of the Elohim and his progressive truth. To break them away from this folly, Elohim sends his message to unsuspected ones. Thus, contrary to their liking and expectation, it is written that the Yahshua hath no form nor comeliness, but in spite of it, he shall be exalted and extolled and be very high. Okay, it says in Isaiah 52:15, so shall he sprinkle many nations, for the kings shall shut their mouths at him, for that which had not been told of them shall they see, and that which they had not heard shall they consider. He is to sprinkle, cleanse, Ezekiel 36:25. Many nations, those who will not turn away from falling, the pride of man will be led to fall in the ditch, so to speak. Every vain person shall drop out through the sieve of the vanity, but the followers of the truth and righteousness shall live forever. None of these things have ever been told to any. It is therefore very important to stop, watch, and listen, and to diligently follow truth itself. Know that the vain make display of themselves, of their achievements, and especially of their religion. Know that they do this in order to draw the hearts of their audience unto themselves, to get a following, to exert their influence to put something over. The Pharisees and Yahshua, they were very proficient in this heart-stealing profession. They prayed on the corners of the streets to be seen by men, and thus they deceived them beyond reclamation. The holy name of Yahweh comes from far, burning with his anger, and the burden thereof is heavy. His lips are full of indignation, and his tongue is as a devouring fire, and his breath, his message for today, as an overflowing stream, shall reach to the midst of the neck, to sift the nations with the sieve of vanity. There shall be a bridle in the jaws of the people, causing them to err. Isaiah 30:27-28. For the ancient Israel wanted the tallest man in the land to be their king, and they got him. He would have led them into ruin, though, had it not been for the ruddy and unpretentious David, who delivered them from the Philistine army and from their giant. We have the same thing today. And typical David is on the scene today, and the spirit and power of the Elijah, and then for the same purpose. For it is a common practice among our Christians to make idols of men. This is recognized even by the ministry of other denominations. A certain minister speaking on religion and life told his radio audience that he stopped at a service station to refill his tank one day. While there, the attendant thought that the minister's voice sounded familiar and asked, "Are you the man I have been listening to every morning on the radio?" As soon as the attendant heard the minister say yes, he emphatically retorted, "I am disappointing you. I thought I was listening to a preacher about 6 feet tall, weighing not less than 200 pounds, but now I see you are only a little runt." This practice is typical among Christians. Briefly, to summarize our study, we see that the time of the purification of the church is at hand. At Zion, the general conference, and Jerusalem, the local conference, are called to awake, so that the daughter of Zion, the church, might be clothed with the righteousness of Yahshua. That she is weak, that she has not the righteousness of Yahshua, that the day of her redemption is now at hand, that she is to be freed from the man's rule and from the hypocrisy, that Zion and Jerusalem, as they are today, are no less oppressing the laity than were the Assyrian lords oppressing the children of the ancient Israel, that Yahweh will not leave his people in ignorance, that they shall know it is the speaking, not an enemy, as they are made to believe, that the message of the kingdom of Elohim is a message of comfort, that his faithful servants shall exalt his message, the voice, that after Zion and Jerusalem awake, they shall see eye to eye, and only those who have withstood temptation and the strength of the Mighty One will have a part in the proclaiming of this message and the loud cry. Review in the Herald, November 19, 1908. That then all the ends of the earth shall see the salvation of our Elohim. That Elohim sends his truth not through those who are exalted and idolized by men, but through unsuspected servants, that those who do not turn from man shall fall, whereas the followers of the truth and righteousness shall live forever. That it is a sacred duty of all truth bearers to proclaim the message unto all the brethren, for if they be not awakened now, they may sleep on forever. We're just about the end of our study. We're going to read the prayer thought for that number 39. It says, the children of the barren more than the children of the barren woman, Zion and the height for glory, the fruits of the anointed ones. Text for prayer, Mount of Blessing, page 201, beginning with the first paragraph. For the way of the transgressors is hard, but wisdom's ways are ways of pleasantness. and all her paths are peace. Every act of obedience unto Yahshua, every act of self-denial for his sake, every trial well endured, every victory gained over temptation is a step in the march into the glory of the final victory. If we take Yahshua for our guide, he will lead us safely. For the road may be rough and the ascent steep. There may be pitfalls upon the right hand, upon the left. We may have to endure toil in our journey. When weary, when longing for rest, we may have to toil on. When faint, we may have to fight. When discouraged, we must still hope. But with Yahshua as our guide, we shall not fall or fail of reaching the desired haven at last. According to the reading, we ought to pray for wisdom and for the determination to walk in the ways of Yahshua. Only his ways are pleasantness and peace. When we must deny ourselves of something, or when we must endure a trial or to gain a victory over temptation, we are to feel that these are steps toward the final victory, and should see that to live the life of sin is, as it were, to live down in the gutter or the gully, down where we naturally find ourselves from the birth up, to get to live on the mountaintop, the kingdom. One must, as it were, climb the steep and rough mountain road. To climb the road may seem hard, but after the last step is made and the peak of the mountain is reached, there is joy and comfort, confidence and victory, which no language can describe. Okay. Well, that pretty much sums it up. We're going to save our next study, number 39, Time of Reading, Volume 1, entitled The Children of the Barren, More Than the Children of the Barren Woman. And we're going to deal with Isaiah chapter 54. This brings in verse 37. Contact us at the 11th hour call. It's number 11. Click on our audio archive. We're going to close this service now with a song.
King of my life, I crown thee now. Thine shall the glory be. Lest I forget thy thorn-crowned brow, lead me to Calvary. Lest I forget Gethsemane, lest I forget thy agony, lest I forget thy love for me, lead me to Calvary. Show me the tomb where thou wast laid, tenderly mourned and wept. Angels arose, a light array, God is the all thou slayed. Lest I forget Gethsemane, lest I forget agony, lest I forget thy love for me, lead me to Calvary. Let me not marry through the gloom, come with the gift to thee. Show to me now the empty tomb, lead me to Calvary. Lest I forget Gethsemane, lest I forget thine agony, lest I forget thy love for me, lead me to Calvary. May I be ready to bear daily my cross for thee, even the cup of grief to share, thou hast borne all for me. Lest I forget Gethsemane, lest I forget forget thy love for me. Leave me to care.